Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. This month we feature an Edgar Allan Poe Award-nominated story by Catalonian author Teresa Solana. Its first appearance in print was in EQMM's Passport to Crime Department, in which, each issue, we bring readers a story in translation. This story, like much of Teresa Solana's work, was translated by her husband, Peter Bush. Recently, it was reprinted in Terror at the Crossroads, Tales of Horror, Delusion, and the Unknown, an anthology co-edited by EQMM's associate editor, Jackie Sherbo. Jackie therefore seemed the perfect reader for our podcast of the story. Here she is with Still Life No. 41 by Teresa Solana from the March-April 2012 issue of EQMM.
I've been sacked. It happened this morning. The chief executive summoned me to his office and said he was sorry, but the minister had decided to relieve me of my post. He said the scandal had gone too far and he couldn't brush it under the carpet. I tried to defend myself, but realized it was hopeless. There was no way he was going to reverse his decision. He dismissed me, my tears welled up, and I went to the bathroom for a good cry. It's unfair. Anyone could have made the same slip. And I mean anyone. In fact, nobody noticed the day the exhibition opened, or the day after. A week went by before the mistake was spotted. Because it was a mistake. And a bad one at that. I wasn't to blame for what happened. No way. And the proof is, the police who arrested me in the first instance let me go scot-free after a couple of days. It was obvious I'd done everything in good faith, and that it was simply one big gaffe. Maybe I was a little naive. Incompetent was the word the Minister of Culture actually used. But naivete and incompetence are hardly crimes. I reckon everyone has a right to make mistakes. What really pisses me off is that I won't find another job in the art world for a good long time as a result of this ridiculous business. They say that at the end of the day, it was my responsibility, and that's why they're giving me the push. But it's obvious they need a scapegoat. They're a bunch of chauvinist pigs. They gave me the option of resigning rather than being sacked. I accepted, naturally. There was only one day to go to the inauguration of the exhibition, and I was nervous, as you can imagine. If you've ever curated an exhibition, you will know what I mean. I just started in my post as director of the MUA, and it was the first big exhibition I'd organized by myself. I was nervous, but also very excited, and so happy, I can tell you. A mere 26 years old, and here I was, about to enter the city's art scene through the front door, because it's no small potatoes to be director of the Museum of Ultra Avant-Garde Art. Absolutely not. Quite a few people would kill to get a position like it. And though I knew every step I made would be scrutinized under a magnifying glass to see whether it was a five-star or a cock-up, I was convinced the exhibition would be a success, and then I'd get my fair share of congratulations. And that was how it turned out. The lunch was first rate, and the artworks and canapés mesmerized those invited in equal measure. They all said Udald Mataplana was a great artist, and the catering firm I contracted belonged to a girlfriend I trusted 100%. If you're going to do something, then do it well, say I. As I told the police, I didn't choose the subject of the exhibition, let alone the pieces that were exhibited. The museum had been negotiating for 2 years with the artist's agent, and I'd only just taken up my post as director. The tragic loss of my predecessor, who died of a sudden heart attack, according to the official version, and from an overdose of blue pills, according to the off-the-record gossip, was a real stroke of luck for me. One opening for an art history graduate is a post directing a museum or gallery, and the deceased was an uncle of mine, and that coincidence really smoothed the path for me. When Uncle died, I'd already been collaborating with him for a year and a half, and Daddy immediately rang the minister to remind him of a thing or two. Obviously, these posts aren't hereditary, but Daddy likes to see some return on the money he pays out whenever there's an election. Besides, competition for any decent post is so fierce nowadays, it's hardly a mortal sin for a father to give his daughter a helping hand. Blood is thicker than water, and Daddy has so many contacts, it would be criminal not to take advantage occasionally of one. My uncle was an old friend and great admirer of Udald Mataplana, and that explains why he decided to curate the exhibition himself. To tell the truth, I wasn't at all familiar with the artist's work, and I'd never met him personally, because contemporary art isn't my strong point, and all the meetings I had were with his agent. I suffered a panic attack the day before the exhibition opened, when I realized there weren't 40 works as stated in the agreement signed by the museum, but 41. "What the hell's that doing there?" I asked, put out, when I saw the piece in the main room. "We don't know where to put it," the installers replied deadpan. I took another look at the sculpture and thought hard. I didn't think I'd ever seen it. After a thorough review of my list, I concluded that piece wasn't part of the selection made for our exhibition. It was an extra. But there it was, and it was no small item. I pondered for a while, then decided to ring the artist and seek his advice. Udald Mataplana wasn't answering his house phone or his mobile. "Typical bloody artist, out on the tiles till late and then sleeping it off in the morning," I raged, enviously. I left a message on his answering machine, not thinking for a moment that he'd never hear it, and pondered what to do next. I knew it was a waste of time to try to speak to his agent, because he'd be flying over an ocean at that point, and uncle was dead, so I didn't know whom I should have recourse to. I started to feel on edge. It wasn't midday yet, and I had to reach a decision whether to return that item to the artist's studio. I'd have to phone the moving firm, talk to the insurance company, change the budget, or discreetly shunt it down into the basement. The item was non-catalog, and it put me on the spot. "So what do I do?" I asked my secretary in a fit of despair. "I've got an appointment at my hairdresser's, and then at my beautician's. We launch the show tomorrow, and I've still got to fetch my dress. They're adjusting. If they've sent it, it means they want it in the exhibition," she said, in her very common sense way. "Find a place for it, and don't worry so. After all, it's only one more sculpture." And that's just what I did. I told the installers to erect a dais in the center of the main room, the only free space left for a work of that size, and told them to put it right there. The title for the work wasn't a problem. They were all called the same. Still Life Number 1, Still Life Number 2, Still Life Number 3. I printed out a label on my computer with the title Still Life Number 41 and placed it in front of the piece, which really took your breath away. Udald Mataplana cultivated an oneric deconstructionist hyperrealism with Baroque touches that he combined with a high emotional charge. Or to put it in plain speak, he spent his time creating realist sculptures on shocking themes to jolt his public's aesthetic horizon and provoke repulsion. I don't know why he did it or why his work was so successful. The fact is, all his sculptures had degeneration, sickness, and death in its most macabre expressions as their leitmotif. Cats and dogs that had been run over, rotten fruit and withered flowers, battered children, women undergoing chemotherapy, decrepit old people, worm-infested skeletons. And to rub it in, the guy added odors to his sculptures, so his withered flowers stank of withered flowers, his sick women of hospitals, and his old people of urine and excrement. They were subtle smells. You had to get close up to get a whiff. But I found it all highly unpleasant, preferring to contemplate his works from afar. My special interest, to be frank, is the Renaissance. And to be precise, the painting and sculpture of the Quattrocento, Donatello, Botticelli, Piero della Francesca, I mean, artists who have gone out of fashion. I have no real enthusiasm for modern art. I can't really see the point. Nonetheless, it was inevitable the contacts my uncle had with avant-garde artists would channel my career far away from my beloved Italians. Getting a post at the MUA was a way to get noticed on the art scene and boost my resume, and one can't reject an opportunity like that when it comes served on a silver platter. Clearly, I'm not a total illiterate in terms of contemporary art, and don't want to justify myself by appealing to my ignorance, but the avant-garde sensibility is so heterogeneous, there's no way one can get a handle on it, or work out what criteria to use. If Uncle said Udald Mataplana was good, I believed him, and if his work wowed the viewing public, then even better. I looked spectacular on the launch day. I'd lost 4 kilos and wore a tight-fitting cerise silk dress that had cost a bomb and sparked a lot of comment. The chief executive came, and so did the Minister of Culture, the President of Parliament, and the Mayor. Udald Matapana didn't come, but his absence was no surprise, because Udald was a bit of an idiot, and would do that kind of thing. Some artists move heaven and earth to secure an interview or appear on TV, and others play hard to get. They never get interviews, because they never grant them. They say they have a phobia when it comes to TV studios. Udald Matapana was one such. He organized a party and went AWOL. An exhibition of his work was organized, and he didn't bother to put in an appearance. In the end, everyone described him as a prickly character with a fondness for enfant terrible antics, and journalists would come to blows to get a statement, interview, or photo out of him. The gossips put it all down to a strategy dreamed up by his agent, but how could you tell? In this country, envy is the mother of all rumors. Still Life No. 41 was the exhibition piece that received by far the most praise. Everyone agreed that the sculpture, representing a male corpse in a fetal position, was easily the best. The critics praised it to the skies. What a masterpiece! What sensibility! It reduced the viewing public to silence. It was certainly the subtlest of all the exhibits, because the figure was clothed from head to foot, and its eyes were hidden behind sunglasses. Nevertheless, the consensus was that the expression of grief one glimpsed under those glasses, by the way, they were fabulously expensive Armanis, was incredibly moving. Udald Matapana thus succeeded in rekindling his status as a cult figure with the country's sophisticated elite. As the days went by, bigger and bigger crowds came to see the exhibition. At times, there were even long queues. We also began to notice that, with each day, the smell got stronger in the room where Still Life No. 41 was on display, and that the sculpture's face and hands were changing shape and color. Initially, they were marble white, like the corpse depicted by Rembrandt in his The Anatomy Lesson of Dr. Nicolaas Tulp. But then, they gradually turned a really repugnant green, and few people dared to look at it for long. After day three, the sculpture began to swell and stuck its tongue out. Everybody thought that was hilarious. We thought, reasonably enough, that Udald Matapana had done it on purpose, and that the strong smell and the changes to the figure were the result of his absolute mastery of his raw materials. Nobody, absolutely nobody, had anything but outright praise for the artist's audacity and technical prowess. "Madame Director," said Sadourney, knocking lightly at the door and walking into my office, "there is a gentleman here who would like to speak to you." Sadourney is a museum security guard who was on duty that day. "A gentleman?" "A visitor. He says it's important, and that if you won't come to see him, he will go straight to the police." "If I must," I said with a deep sigh, "tell him to come in. But you stay near the door, right, Sadourney?" Most of the loonies who slip into museums are harmless enough, but one can't ever be too careful. When the man walked into my office, I asked him to leave the door ajar on the pretext that my air conditioning wasn't working. He introduced himself and said he was a doctor. "What the hell do you think you're doing displaying that decomposing corpse in the main room?" he blasted me. I smiled at him. A pity I was on the verge of marriage, because that guy was gorgeous, and I could do with a fling to break my boring routine. Anyway, the anecdote about the doctor who'd been fooled by the unrivaled art of Udald Matapana would be good publicity for the exhibition, and I mentally began to drop a press release describing our encounter. "Don't worry," I replied, still smiling. "It's only a sculpture, and it's extremely well made." "It is not a sculpture," the doctor replied solemnly. "It is a dead man." "You are quite wrong. It is a sculpture," I assured him. "No need to worry." "Sculptures do not separate liquids, nor do they create a stink, and nor do they attract insects." "Oh, that's all the invention of an artist who is simply a genius. Now, miss, I'm the doctor here, and do you mind telling me what your field is?" I asked him, showing that I was beginning to lose my temper. I was basically delighted by his wrongheadedness, and already relishing the pleasure I would derive from telling the story to my friends over a drink that night. "I'm a psychiatrist, but I can assure you I recognize a dead man when I see one." I smiled yet again. I'd always thought psychiatrists were fascinating, and I'd never dated one. "I quite understand if this sculpture has upset you. If you like, we can go for a coffee and talk about it. I'm Fefa," I added, holding my hand out to shake his. "Please follow me," he insisted in an authoritarian tone. You have to see this for yourself. At that moment, in steps Adorni, who had inevitably been listening to our exchange. I'm sorry, Madame Director. Forgive me for meddling in something that's not my business, but I do think you should go and have a look. The room really stinks. I sighed. All right, I'd see this joke through to the bitter end. Then I'd have more material for my press release, and more to gossip over with my friends. I got up from my extremely uncomfortable designer chair and accompanied them. The museum had had no other visitors that day. As soon as I entered the main room, I understood why. I say, it really does stink to high heaven. And where do all these flies come from? Corpses attract insects. And you're lucky you've got air conditioning, the doctor replied, giving me a good, hard look up and down. I don't believe it. It can't be true, I said, all a tremble. Take a close look. What do you see? It's green and black in some places, and the skin's covered in blebs. I'm no expert, he explained, straightening his glasses and staring slyly down my cleavage. But I would estimate this man has been dead at least a week. Take a look. His epidermis has separated from his dermis, and his gases have expanded. That's why he's so inflated. I think he's vomited too, I mumbled. Miss, that's the fluid thrown up by his internal organs that are decomposing. It's expelled through the nose and mouth. My God, I exclaimed, jumping backwards. There are maggots everywhere. I don't remember anymore, because I fainted at that point. The police didn't take a minute to identify the corpse, which still carried his ID card. It was Udald Mataplana. As his head was completely hairless and he was wearing sunglasses, no one had recognized him. No one had missed him, either, which didn't mean very much, because he was a man with few friends. You know, what you call real friends. After finding no traces of blood, the police at first concluded he must have had a massive heart attack. Their second idea was that he was balmy, and it must be a case of self-immolation by poisoning, because he wanted to turn himself into an exhibit. Their thinking had some logic to it, but they were wrong. When the autopsy was carried out, the forensic doctor discovered a tiny hole in his shirt and a small wound in his thorax. The police believe it was murder, I announced at the press conference I called, to which I wore a white dress and a very fetching pink foulard. The assassin stuck a thin cylindrical pin through the ribs and across the pericardium, thus perforating the heart. As it was a tiny wound, his own dried blood plugged it, and that's why he didn't bleed, I explained, putting on a brave face as I read word for word the crib I'd got from my secretary, who'd had a fling with the forensic and snaffled a copy of the autopsy for me. I added, absolutely confident everyone would understand my slip. I think it was quite reasonable for me not to recognize it wasn't a sculpture. Don't you agree? Well, no, they didn't. And the next day, the newspapers took me to the cleaners. It was evident I'd been under pressure from the launch, got my knickers in a twist, and made a big error in judgment. I should have sent the item down to the basement, but it was too late to put that right. They're now saying it was one of his students. The girl was fed up with Udald Mataplana using every opportunity to feel her up, and, in a rage, she'd stuck into him one of the half-sized steel pins he was attaching to still life number 17, a life-size sculpture representing a sick woman in a wheelchair weaving. They found traces of blood on the pin, and the installers immediately identified the girl who'd helped them mount the work. She is currently in the slammer. I really couldn't care less about the student, Udald Mataplana, his sculptures, or the whole damn show. All I know is that I'm out of work, and that this time Daddy's calls didn't help, because the scandal had hit the headlines and there was too much fallout. Mummy says I should forget it, that I already had my hands full with the preparations for my wedding and Cancun honeymoon, but then she belongs to another generation and doesn't understand it's not the done thing anymore not to work outside the home. I'm not awfully enthusiastic about having to clock in every morning, but we modern women, even if we belong to the upper bracket, have to work, or at least go through the motions. Daddy says I shouldn't worry, that as soon as things cool down, he will pick up his telephone again. I'm going to think of it as paid holidays, because I gather I have the right to unemployment benefits, even though I resigned. As Daddy says to console me, I'm young and have a whole lifetime in front of me. When I get back from Cancun, we'll see. For the moment, I have an appointment to have coffee with that psychiatrist, whose name is Louise, and who is awfully nice. And you know, if I'm bored when I get back from my honeymoon and can't find my kind of work, I can always go into politics. Become an MP or something of that sort. Who knows? I am known for my drive and might make it to chief executive. Or minister of culture. Yes, it would be great to be a minister. Though I'm not sure. If I were a minister, I'd have to live in Madrid. It's very cold in Madrid in winter and very hot in summer. And they don't have a beach or a Port Olympic or ski slopes nearby. And Mummy would be terribly distraught if I upped and went to live so far away.
Still Life number 41 is copyrighted by Teresa Solana. Music for the podcast entitled Turning the Screw was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycueenmysterymagazine.com.